nanohub.org.
Online simulation and more for nanotechnology.
So maybe Aida, you want to start? What is the difference between intrinsic and extrinsic breakdown? What could it be? It is true. So if you have in the original one, original oxide, if you have pre-existing defects because your manufacturing was imperfect, or you did not tie up all the bond statistics, you remember, bond distribution, some of them were broken, right? So that would be extrinsic, pre-existing, extrinsic breakdown. So if breakdown occurs because of those defects, then that would be extrinsic. On the other hand, if it was perfect and the new defects formed and essentially led to breakdown, that is intrinsic. Okay. What is the difference between correlated and uncorrelated breakdown?
Uncorrelated breakdown, yes, that the second breakdown has nothing to do with the first one. But in a correlated breakdown, the first breakdown somehow enhanced or reduced the probability of seeing the second breakdown.
Exactly. So essentially what you are saying on one level down is that all the defects are formed completely independent of each other. So therefore, that will be uncorrelated breakdown. And correlated breakdown happens, as I just mentioned, for hot carrier degradation that might occur, or if you put a back gate bias, then that might also give rise to correlated breakdown. Of course, in higher voltage, you can have correlated breakdown also. Can you use the box percolation theory for thick oxides as well? Box percolation meaning that putting little boxes, the red boxes that I put, did a simple calculation, and Piyush will answer it because he asked it a few seconds ago.
Yeah, we will need to modify the theory taking into account the tree structure as shown here.
That's right. So therefore, the box percolation theory where you discount any non-linear path or curved path, that essentially you cannot do it so simply. But even then, this is not very complicated. If you go to thick oxides, then very thick meaning that's M more than, let's say, 50, again the theory becomes very simple. So when M is 3 simple, M is 50 simple, in between, it's a little complicated, right? All right, how does Weibull slope relate to oxide thickness?
So the Weibull slope actually decreases with the decreasing oxide thickness.
Linearly, right?
And low Weibull slope is actually good.
Is low Weibull slope good?
No, not good.
His company will be in trouble. Very bad, right? Because it's a log-log plot. And you are a straight line in a log-log plot will mean that when you are extrapolating, orders of magnitude shift in the lifetime for a tiny change in the slope on the top, right? So low Weibull slope is very bad. Does Weibull slope depend on voltage? What about defect size?
I think it doesn't depend on voltage.
That's right.
And it depends on defect size.
Does depend on the defect size, because the value of M, how many defects need to line up before the percolation, depends on the size of A. If you just needed 2, it will be P squared. If you needed 10, P to the power 10, very different probability. Yes?
When we're talking about the defect size, are we just considering one or two, or, you know?
One of them. Each red box is, let's say, E prime center.
No, in a certain material. So let's say I'm missing an oxygen somewhere. So is it the size of the oxygen that was supposed to be there, or, you know?
Yeah, so this is a phenomenological theory. What it means that A is sort of a parameter related to the defect. And so the way you determine A is you do interpret the Weibull slope distribution as a function of thickness and obtain the value of A. Now, of course, you have to make sure that A doesn't become 10 nanometer. Because if the size of your defect is larger than your oxide thickness, then your theory is wrong. But if A is on the order, as you saw, it's about 5 angstrom, that will be the size of a missing oxygen atom in a lattice.
Is there an independent way of measuring that defect size?
Of course, but whether that has direct implication on the Weibull slope. Weibull slope is simply saying that there is the effective size that matters. And that has to do with how easily current can jump from one state to the next. And that depends on the distribution of the electrostatic potential. So it's not the chemical size, it's the electrostatic size. Right. Can you estimate the defect size of silicon dioxide from the Weibull slope? So you just answered that question, so hopefully I'll not have to ask you again. Why is that people did not notice this distribution until recently, Arun? Until recently means 15 years ago.
Because they worked with thick dielectrics, or is it to do with the IDRs, the same voltage was?
Voltage was very high, that's true, but this is first breakdown we are talking about. So, the thickness was very high, right? And 10 nanometer, let's say. So in that case, what happened? You see, that's the origin of this, all this debate. And so what would happen? That this would be very sharp, right? So let's say it's a 10 nanometer oxide. What will be the size of beta? 5 angstrom. This is about 20. 20 is a straight line. So in old days, therefore, anytime people saw on such a thick oxide, anytime people saw funny business, they knew that this is because your original oxide is defective. And they didn't have this idea about what is the intrinsic and fundamental limit of oxide breakdown. So they used to always find that if you work hard enough, gradually it becomes steeper. And that's why in all your textbooks, they write not a TBD, they write a breakdown. Electric breakdown, the field, critical field for breakdown, because they always used to occur almost simultaneously for a given voltage. And so therefore, there is no distribution to worry about. One thing, however, you have to understand that this is a log plot. So although it looks straight, the width of this line is actually much bigger than the width of this line. You see? Because it's a log plot. So something that looks very steep on a log plot doesn't necessarily mean that this is slope. It is only that the mean value has reduced and the slope relative to the mean has widened. This is very important. This looks steep, but actually if you go in and blow out that part, you will see that that is much bigger than this distribution. I often say distribution is physical. Do you understand what it means in the TGV context?
Well, it depends on NVGI and ACI. Those things depend on the reaction-diffusion model. All right. These things are physical. That is
right. No, but I'm taking distribution is physical. What do I mean by that? Statistical distribution is physical. What do I mean by that? This is an important point, so let me say once, just to emphasize the point. You know, there is a tendency. Circuit designers do it all the time. People in various community do it all the time. Anytime you do not know, you assume a Gaussian. Right? Why do you assume a Gaussian? Because many things are described by Gaussian when you don't know. When you flip a coin, there's no chance that it will be purely an ideal coin maybe, but it's a physics process, right? When you throw it out, there's air resistance and all. Depends on how high it went, how many flipped it, and when you get it down here, then it's a outcome is already determined by the physics of it. If you had a thick coin, probability is never going to be a Gaussian, because sometimes it can land on the edge. And if it does so, then it's not going to be a Gaussian. So therefore, anytime you have a physics description of the problem, your statistical distribution will be physical. Here it is weighable. It is coming from physics. If you tried to fit it with a Gaussian, you might have. But it would have given you completely wrong results because this is not a Gaussian problem. Fish in a river is another distribution which is physical because it came from the physics of the problem. Physics dictated what would be the arrival time distribution, right? So only when you do not know, sometimes you may put it in terms of, you know, Gaussian or Poisson, you can do it. But it should always be, if you can, you should always derive the distribution physically because otherwise that distribution doesn't have much of a meaning, right? You cannot extrapolate it. You cannot use 10,000 transistor simulation assuming Gaussian distribution and then extrapolate it to 100 billion transistors. There's no way because the physics is not understood, so therefore you cannot extrapolate, right? So is this clear? Okay.